right. Welcome back, John O'Leary. How you doing, man?
I'm doing so good, man. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, man, we were just talking. John, as part of La Lucha, played at one of our CJH Presents Wanderlust events this past weekend. They did a reimagine, this sort of 80s party, reimagining 80s classics in a jazz style, and it was such a great time. Did you have fun with that, John?
Oh my gosh, it was a blast. It was so much fun to do that concert. We were so privileged.
So cool. Such a great vibe. We are recording these sessions for the purposes of Clearwater Jazz Holiday Education and Outreach, and we are welcoming John O'Leary back today as our guest on a topic, What I Love About Bill Evans. And this is part of a series that we call the What I Love About series, as part of our Young Lions Jazz Master virtual sessions. And John has already done one of these on Oscar Peterson recently, which will be up in our studio soon. But John's done a lot of other sessions for us as well, including participating in a rhythm section focus section or session, sorry, an approach to jazz harmony on piano, piano technique in jazz, how to develop a language for improvisation on piano, how to develop rhythmic ideas to improvise better, how to create melodic lines for improvisation, and how to use block chords. All fantastic sessions archived at no cost in our studio, as well as our podcast, the Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions Podcast. John's making me laugh. Talking about Alejandro Arenas's wardrobe at the recent concert, I think, which was fantastic. So, yeah, there's so many great sessions up there. You can listen to them. You can watch them. When they're in the studio, they're presented by Blue Water Wealth Management at Steward Partners and Duke Energy. And when they are on the podcast, they're presented by Marine Max Clearwater. Let me tell you a little bit about John, and we're going to turn it over to John then for his topic today on What I Love About Bill Evans. John is a Mexican-American jazz pianist. He's also a neuroscientist. He's the pianist for the highly acclaimed trio La Lucha that plays in the Tampa Bay area and beyond. John has had a winding path. He was born in the Yucatan Peninsula, where he started piano lessons very early at the age of 3 and played classical piano until the age of 12. But once in the United States, he picked up the tuba, and he did that in concert band and continued to develop his musicianship through high school and later gravitated to the piano. But he scored accolades on both instruments. He attended the University of South Florida, where he studied tuba, jazz piano, and biochemistry. He graduated cum laude with a BA in jazz piano performance, a minor in tuba performance, and an honors thesis in biochemistry. Afterwards, John toured Italy and France with the USF Big Band, Jazz Tet Combo, playing in the 2007 Umbria Jazz Festival and the Juan Les Pins Jazz Festival. As a member of these bands, he has played with many jazz greats, including Randy Brecker and Wycliffe Gordon. As a scientist, John completed his PhD in neuroscience at the University of South Florida, where he is the recipient of the Ruth L. Kirchstein Predoctoral Fellowship from the National Institute of Neurological Disease and Stroke. He has been an invited speaker at the Society for Neuroscience, Midwestern Stress Response, and American Chemical Society conferences. Check out La Lucha's music wherever you stream your music, and check out their latest release, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, which is fantastic. I also, there's a holiday album out as well, isn't there?
Yes.
You have to tell us a little bit about that too, but I'm going to turn it over to you now, John. Thanks for being with us again.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much. This is wonderful. This is one of my favorite topics. I love talking about pianists that I have been influenced by so much. And I'm going to go here and share my my screen. I can share my keynote. There it is. I have this keynote on Bill Evans. So yeah, I'm so excited to do this. Bill Evans is a pianist that has influenced me tremendously. I've listened to him so much. And, you know, the last one, I'm actually doing this in chronological order of how they became influential in my life, in my playing. And Oscar Peterson was the first pianist I had ever heard. And as, you know, once I was in college and I was studying the tuba and I was studying biochemistry and these things, I saw these guys in a room playing jazz. And I was like, oh, I miss playing jazz. I miss being in the jazz band in high school. And they sounded so good. And it was Mark and Alejandro. And they asked me to sit down and play with them, but I didn't know how to play. So I knew I really wanted to learn. I wanted to be part of that. And at the end of that semester, I went to visit my grandfather. My grandfather was, he was born in 1922. So he grew up in like the swing and bebop and the jazz era. And he loved jazz. He had Bing Crosby records and Nat King Cole. He loved those guys so much. And so it was great. I could get my fix over there with him and hang out. And he had this CD by Bill Evans. It was this one right here. It was this conversation of Marion McPartland with Bill Evans. And Bill, Marion had this piano show for many, many, many years on National Public Radio called Piano Jazz, Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, where she would invite different musicians, not always pianists, but most often pianists, and they would talk and perform and do two piano stuff, and they would share about their life and their development. And it's super incredible. So many great pianists have been interviewed on Marion's Piano Jazz. And so if you've never heard her show, I highly recommend it. But it was in listening this particular conversation that I was like, wow, I have to play. I have to go. When I go back to college, I'm going to apply to the college to change my major, or to add, to at least have a combo and see what's going on. And I didn't make it into the major that semester, but I was able to start taking lessons and playing a combo, and I was listening to Bill Evans. And so when that was let me show you a video of Bill Evans so you can get an idea of the feel of how his playing was. Now, Bill Evans was very different from Oscar Peterson. In fact, almost polar opposites in terms of their influences and their approach to music. Although they're equally super, super popular, and they were both very, very well-respected musicians in their field. So check this out. This is from a performance in 1980, probably a month before he died. This is really beautiful. Oh, it's Mark Johnson on bass and Joe LaBarbera on drums. Thank you. So right away, you can tell that his sensibility is much more classical music, and he has, he's very influenced by different classical underpinnings. You know, when he plays, he's got, you don't know if he's playing Ravel he adds the jazz sensibility to a very classical palette, which is absolutely stunning given that this was happening in the 50s, right? Nobody was doing that then. So that is, you know, one of the big things that Bill Evans kind of changed the aesthetic of what jazz could be. And this was happening at the same time as Miles Davis was doing the same thing in this very similar direction. So you can see why things went that way instead of Oscar Peterson's way of more traditional approach and that swinging virtuoso. And you can also see that although what he's doing is very intricate, it's not necessarily like he's not trying to play super fast on the piano to see all the how many notes he can get. And he's very melodic and developing and trying to tell a story instead of being, check out all these crazy chops that I have. So then when I was in that semester in school where I could play what I was doing tuba and biochemistry, and I was doing lessons in jazz piano and a combo, and I was doing everything at once. This is the first record that I grabbed of Bill Evans that I was like, okay, let's try to copy what he's playing. Let's play along. Let's try to listen to this over and over and internalize these sounds and the way in which the music's supposed to be. And so there's this particular track in this called Autumn Leaves, which is a very popular jazz standard. And the way he plays Autumn Leaves in this is pretty incredible. So also notice really quick that what Bill Evans is really famous for doing is changing how the rhythm section plays. You won't hear the bass player going, it's not going to be like that. It's not going to be like the Oscar Peterson trio where they go, and then the piano goes on top of that. In fact, he was treating each instrument as their own voice. And just like you heard in this previous version, the bass player was playing melodies and was actually filling around the holes of what he was performing. And the drums were part of that whole conversation but also keeping time. And so it's really interesting. He created this new interplay between the instruments that didn't exist before. The roles were much more defined, and the people stayed within those roles much more. And then he said, hey, let's take these roles and kind of move out of them a little bit and see, explore what we can do in treating each instrument as a voice rather than as a specific thing it's supposed to do. So check out, this is Autumn Leaves, Portrait in Jazz, Bill Evans Trio. After that, it's a very extended, long solo, but you could see that the bass solo, there was no accompaniment there. He just let him go by himself. Even the drums dropped out, and that's something that he was trying to like develop these different ideas of how to play around with the rhythm section to create different textures and different ways of having a conversation together. Okay, so here, this is Marty Morrell. Now, Marty is a friend of the Clearwater Jazz Holiday. He's part of the Young Lions master sessions, and I think he's done the youth orchestra stuff, teaching and mentoring kids, and we're so fortunate that he lives in the area. Now, he played with Bill Evans for about 10 years. And I think he was the longest drummer to play with Bill Evans and with Eddie Gomez on bass. And he is incredible that because he was a kid, I think he was like 24 when he was picked up by the Bill Evans Trio. He was in New York. He was playing with Mary McPartland and different cats. Listen to this interview and how he talks about this album I was just showing you, Portrait in Jazz, and about how he talks about Bill Evans.
This is Drummer Nation.
139. Sorry, I needed to go see where I needed to fast forward to.
This is Drummer Nation.
I met some other drummers, and one guy in particular, Alan Schwartzberg, and he and I became good buddies. And he was all about Max Roach and Elvin Jones and Philly Joe Jones. And so I was introduced to all of that, you know. Although my last year in high school, bass player introduced me to the Bill Evans Trio. Okay? And he played me Portrait in Jazz. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, that changed my life. Because I was absolutely blown away. I said, wow, this is incredible music.
Well, that's what I wanted to discuss. How is that different than the music of the late 50s?
Well, in the late 50s, you know, I was kind of playing shows, you know, like the Catskill Mountains, and I was doing gigs, you know. I wasn't doing a lot of jazz, although I did play with Mary McPartland, and I played with Steve Kuhn and Zoot Sims.
Oh, yeah.
And Al Cohen and Zoot Sims. And, you know, it's kind of a swinging style, like straight ahead.
And stylistically, by the mid-60s, things had changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how would you describe those stylistic differences?
Well, as you know, the early Bill Evans trios right, were, well, the actually the original one, but Scott LaFleur and Paul Motion, they created this new rhythm section concept of interplay, where each musician had their own voice, melodically and rhythmically, right? And they weren't just like chugging along, like keeping time, right? And that was kind of the beginning of the new modern rhythm section as we know it today. I believe that.
I think so. It's often cited along with John Coltrane Quartet of the day and the Miles Davis mid-60s quartet as being the harbinger of what was to come.
Right.
With regard to freeing up the limbs and not playing just strictly a supportive role, but much more interactive.
Right, interacting with one another. Absolutely. That's an interplay. That's it became more of a conversation within the rhythm section, rather than just like a functionary machine,
right,
that would, right, you know, support the band, right.
And is that something you were heading towards anyway, or did you make a big adjustment to
what? No, I didn't make a big adjustment. When I first played with Bill, you know, I had listened to all his records, and you know, I was a huge fan, and I admired Paul Motion. Paul Motion. Back then, we should say Paul Motion or Paul Motion. I'm not sure which is correct. Right, but I just love the trio, and so the natural thing to do was when I had a chance to play with Bill to try to emulate Paul Motion, right? So that's what I did, and we tried to just kind of fall into that. That was a natural way to play with Bill. I thought it felt. That was what felt the best way.
Well, it was a classic trio, rounded out by Eddie Gomez, who was doing similar things on the bass.
Right.
It was all three roles were different.
Right. We were just kind of taking, you know, what Scott LaFleur started, and Scott LaFleur and Paul Motion, what they started, we, you know, stayed in that vein and tried to, you know, imitate that and take from that and maybe take it a few steps further.
Yes, you did. And in that day, though, I imagine this is not something that was discussed on the bandstand.
No, never. It was something that was you just either you could play that way or not, you know. And I was fortunate enough to have listened to Bill a lot before, and I kind of understood what was required. Mm-hmm. So when I got the opportunity to play with him, I kind of fell in. In fact, the first night at the Vanguard, he told me, I said, wow, he said, it sounds like you've been playing with us for a long time. And I said, well, in a way I have, and I've been listening so much. I knew all the material and then the style, and so.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Whoops, sorry about that. I absolutely love Marty, and I've had the pleasure to play and record with him, and he's one of my dearest friends and mentor. And that's incredible, the stories that he has and about Bill Evans, and to share, to do world tours with him and records and all of that. That's beautiful. So when I was in this time of like obsessively doing everything Bill Evans, I was reading this book, How My Heart Sings. And it has, it talks so much about his life and encompasses a broad scope about different part of his life and growing up and his influences, and just really, really cool to learn about the person as well as listening to the records, you know. And so Bill was born in 1929. Believe it or not, he's actually younger than Dick Hyman, who's still around today, and I think he's gonna be 94. I think he's going to be 94 in March, Dick Hyman. But unfortunately, Bill passed really young in September of 1980. He was classically trained at Southeastern Louisiana University and the Mannes School of Music, where he majored in composition. So it's, I don't know how often, you know, these early jazz musicians in the 1920s, how many of them had a chance to go to college and major in music and get a degree and study classical piano and that kind of stuff. So I have a feeling that this was a rare, more or less, more or less this didn't happen. And so he had a big he was largely influenced by Western philosophy of music organization theory, and then he started with George Russell when he moved to New York. And George Russell has this whole like tonal approach. He wrote a book on his ideas on theory and tonality. And then in 1958, Bill joined the Miles Davis group, which is really incredible. I don't know if this is true, but I remember hearing a story in college that Bill got home from a session, from working or from a session late at night, and there was a note on his door. It was like 4 a.m. and he said, "Hey, Miles wants you to record with him in the studio this morning." So he like went to sleep and then woke up after 4 or 5 hours and then went to the studio and recorded Kind of Blue. And I don't know if this is true, but that would be pretty amazing. It wouldn't surprise me. I can hardly function if I don't sleep at least 7 hours. And Bill is amazing. So then in 1959, he started his basic trio with Scott LaFaro and Paul Motion. And that's where he created these revolutionary ideas about how a rhythm section should change. So the 1950s, this is really when he was developing and mastering this, these ideas that he wanted to do. And the rest is history. Like after that, he just just took those ideas and make them bigger and finesse them more, expanded upon them. But that 1950s, those 10 years were really important in his development of his idea and of who he wanted to become as an artist and how he wanted to sound. So there are many things that I love about Bill Evans, but I really love his classical music influence. And his first breakout album was Everybody Digs Bill Evans. This was with Sam Jones on bass and Philly Joe Jones on drums. Not to be confused with Papa Joe Jones, whom I believe Mark Feynman is going to talk about Papa Joe Jones very soon. Well, Philly Joe Jones was a great, great drummer. And Philly played with Miles and a lot of those cooking and steaming, relaxing, texting, Instagramming with with the Miles Davis quintet, all these different things. And so, Bill was, this was in 1959, this is a really fun and interesting recording. You can see here in the album cover all the different quotes of the different people who had already heard and knew about Bill Evans because of his collaboration with Miles and all the great things. I've sure learned a lot from Bill Evans. He plays the piano the way it should be played, Miles Davis. You know, and so Miles really liked his classical approach, his minimalistic approach, and it was much more in sync with what he wanted to do than, for example, Oscar Peterson. Oscar Peterson was very much about the blues and playing the blues and sticking to what the roots of jazz with. And so Bill Evans is one of the most refreshing pianists I have heard in years, George Shearing. And I think Bill Evans is one of the finest Ahmad Jamal. And Bill has the rare originality and taste and the even rarer ability to make his conception of a number seem the definitive way to play it, Cannonball Adderley. And so, I mean, that's pretty incredible because this, you know, there are already so many great musicians in the 1950s. But when he came out with this album, there was a piece called Peace, Peace. That's the name of the tune. And you hear it, and you would not believe that this is a jazz artist in the late 50s. Check this out. Thank you. Whoops. And so you get to hear this. It kind of sounds like Eric Satie, the Gymnopédies that he wrote. Eric Satie wrote these in the late 19th century, like 1896 or so. Check what that sounds like. This is Eric Satie. Now go back and listen to this. Right? And it's kind of like he's creating this mood. And so, you know, many people consider Eric Satie like the creator of ambient music, because what he's really playing here is to create a mood of a feeling. And with like what's going on in the music is more about the feeling than about the music itself. And it doesn't hurt that the melody is very singable and very memorable. I remember being a kid and listening to this and feeling like I was floating between buildings. I could imagine like flying. Now check out this piece by Chopin. I forget what it's called, the Berceuse of Chopin. And this piece also features a pedal where you have one note that is, you keep playing that over and over in the bass, and everything else is a jumping off point off of that. It takes a few seconds for this one. This is Arthur Rubinstein, the master. Immediately see that it's possible that Bill Evans was very influenced by classical music and how he created his conception for he wanted to play. So another thing, what I love about Bill is that he was so thoughtful about how he wanted to sound. He was very conscious about what it is that he wanted to share. And, you know, like, because he could have sounded like anything or anybody, but he had his own thing, and he was very good about nurturing that and create that. So I really love that, how he was so original in his playing and his sound. And but it was less like, I don't know, I think he really had decided, I want jazz to sound like this. I want my sound to sound like this. And he like purposefully cultivated that, rather than, at least that's the feeling that I get listening to him talk and hearing him play, rather than other musicians who are, these are the influences that came out in my playing, almost as if their subconscious just let it out without their ability to filter it. So here, going back to this recording of Mary McPartland and Bill Evans, here is him and Marion talking about how he crafts his sound.
Bill, that's beautiful. Thank you. Waltz for Debbie.
Waltz for Debbie.
Unlike I ever heard it before.
It's, yes?
Yeah.
That's the original. That's more or less the original version, written when I was just out of the Army. I was about 24 years old.
That's probably your best known tune, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, surprisingly enough. And the only one that I play and have recorded that I wrote earlier than that is Very Early, which I wrote when I was in college. Then I had 3 years in the Army, came Waltz for Debbie. And being so early on, it's surprising.
How do you feel that your playing has changed since you first started? Is it deliberate or is it just happening to change?
Well, it's deliberate, but I stay along the same lines, but I try to get a little deeper into what I'm doing. As far as that kind of playing goes, I think maybe my left hand is a little more competent, and of course I worked a lot on inner things happening, like inner voices I've worked on. And as far as the jazz playing goes, I think the rhythmic construction of the thing has evolved quite a bit. Now, I don't know how obvious that would be to the listener, but the displacement of phrases and you know, the way phrases follow one another and their placement against the meter and so forth is something that I've worked on rather hard, and it's something I believe in. It has little to do with trends. It has more to do it has more to do with my feeling about my basic conception of jazz structure and jazz melodies and the way the rhythmic things follow one another. And so I just keep trying to get deeper into that. And as the years go by, I seem to make some progress in that direction and do some things which please myself. And I know what's happening, even
if nobody
else does.
Well, that's the main thing. I think a lot of people forget that. They're so busy looking around to see what the new thing is that quote, they are all talking about, whoever they are, you know, that they forget to do what you're talking about, which is doing things to please yourself and engineer your own growth.
Yeah.
And
we must look at it as an art. I mean, otherwise we're going to get so confused, because there are a million things you can do, and so you just have to perfect your own art, and hopefully there will be room for it. And I'm very thankful for the position I have and the freedom I have, and I just keep my focus and I play what pleases me.
I wish you'd just show me what you mean about the displacement of the. Could you do that on that tune? Could you do a little bit of
now,
that? I mean, maybe I could play a bass line or something to help things along.
I could do it. I think I could illustrate that better on, say, All of You.
Okay, so now check out.
Oh, that was that's one of your great tunes.
Check out. I am playing All of You.
I'll have to get into it a little bit, though.
Go ahead. Thank you.
That's pretty amazing. And so hearing this, I was in Lake Jackson, Texas, at my grandfather's house, hearing this exact recording. And I was like, oh, I have to major in jazz piano. I have to find a way to get in there. And sure enough, I did. But this particular recording, this one track had me like, just, it still gives me that feeling listening to it all these years afterwards. Just like, wow, I want to sit down and play along with it and try to learn more about what he's doing in there, you know, just so beautiful. So he had that way with rhythm. He had that way with rhythm and with harmony, and the way he manipulated that and the songs create this incredible feeling. So I love
Bill. That's beautiful.
I love that about Bill Evans. Okay. The next thing that's interesting about him is that the blues wasn't his thing. But you just heard me last time on Oscar Peterson saying how much I love the blues. How could it be that now I love that this guy doesn't like, you know, it's not that he doesn't like the blues, but he, for him, Bill, the blues isn't like a vehicle for his self-expression. It's just not, his background is not where, you know, it's just what it is. And, you know, he didn't like particularly playing the blues or playing bluesy things. And when he did, he often chose not to play bluesy on blueses. The blues just wasn't his thing. So what's interesting is that he was a Miles Davis's kind of blue. So you bet there are a couple of blues in Miles Davis's kind of blue. And, you know, he's on most of the tunes, except for the very bluesy one, Freddie Freeloader. He doesn't play on Freddie Freeloader. Wynton Kelly plays on that. But on the more modal, less abstract, more abstract tunes, it is Bill. And so check out how he approaches playing a solo on Kind of Blue. I'm sure you all know Kind of Blue. And there's a solo by Miles and then Cannonball and then John Coltrane. So I'm just going to skip ahead and just do Bill Evans's solo on this tune. Yeah, so that's really interesting, right? So, like, imagine Oscar Peterson and how that would have sounded, right? So check it out. I also, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of these recordings have the word stereo on the front. And I was, you know, I noticed it before, but I've never researched it. And today I was like, why does it stay stereo on all these recordings? And the reason it says stereo on these recordings is because stereo recordings didn't exist until like 1957. And when they came out, it was this craze on hi-fi and high fidelity. And even on this one, it says guaranteed high fidelity. So there was this craze over playing music and stereo and creating a better experience for listening. And just like any other technology, it had to be sold and explained and be taught what it is. And if you're happy with your mono, why you should want to listen to stereo. But I love it that jazz was so willing to add technology so early on. And so one of the hallmark of jazz is to continue to use technology in the making of its music. And Bill Evans was a pioneer in that. He had a album called Conversations with Myself, where he would he overdubbed himself, so you can hear three different Bill Evanses. He was playing a line, and then he'd play in the gaps, and then he'd find more gaps and ways to play along with the two of them. So he played three versions of Bill Evans. And so even though he didn't play with synthesizers, he was very much part of that stereo revolution and overdubbing and the ability to do those things. That was fairly new. You just had takes. There was no fixing. You just had a take and that was it, you know? And so that's cool that he was also involved in some part of the technology front. So another thing that I love about Bill Evans is how drastically the rhythm section changed after his records came out. So everybody digs Bill Evans. It's probably, that was his breakout album. That's when people start to like finally hear him as a leader, and he sounded really great on those albums and had a nice conceptions about classical music, like I talked about before, that weren't there before. But that was with Sam Jones and Philly Joe Jones. And so that wasn't his trio. After that, his most acclaimed trio, I think, by the critics is Sunday at the Village Vanguard. This was with Scott LaFaro and Paul Motion. And this is the trio that Marty Morrell was talking about. This is where Scott LaFaro was like super, super young, maybe 21, 22, 23. And he was a virtuoso, like a big time virtuoso of the bass. This is like probably 1961. And this is live at the Village Vanguard. And they're just playing like nobody played before. So this features two of his recordings, Shades of Jade and Gloria Step. And those are both by Scott LaFaro compositions and really interesting. And then he takes a Miles Davis composition, which who knows if Miles actually wrote it, called Solar. And what I want you to pay attention here is, again, how the bass is not going to play dun 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 dun. No. And the drums are not going to go ding 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 ding. They're not just going to go and play that under Solar. They play as if they were soloing in a sense, but counter soloing underneath the melody and underneath what Bill Evans is doing and creating a whole new aesthetic of how a rhythm section can play together. This is Solar. Thank you. That is my talk on Bill Evans. You know, something that's really impressive about Bill is that I think he must have been, so if he was born in 1929, right? Is that what I said? Yeah, 1929. That means that he would have been 29 or 30 when he started with Miles. And then 31, 32, when he recorded that Sunday at the Village Vanguard, one of his most critically acclaimed albums. But then he was in music school doing classical music and composition, and then went in the army for 3-4 years. And so then he must have been like 24, and then it took him 5 years to really develop what he wanted to develop to become a jazz musician. He didn't go to jazz school. There was no, you know, here are the 2-5-1 licks that you transcribe. He just figured it out. Like, this man was brilliant, and it's really quite amazing to hear what came out in such short amount of time. So yeah, I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to this, and check out those records. Everybody Digs Bill Evans, Portraits in Jazz, and Sunday at the Village Vanguard. They have some view. Oh, and the conversation with Mary McPartland. Such wonderful, wonderful records that continue to inspire me even 15, 20 years after I first heard them.
I love it, John. Well done, my friend.
Thank you.
That was awesome. No, I mean, such a great presentation. Really, really good information. I can't wait to add this to the studio resource and to the podcast. You're going to be back with us. Yes. For those folks that are enjoying the What I Love About series, there's a lot of really, really cool upcoming sessions with many participating musicians, but John specifically is going to be back with us on November 30th, I believe. And then he also has dates already on the books in December with a lot of really, really, really great people. And so for deeper dives into sort of the human aspect of a lot of these musicians, please also take a look at the Stop Time series with Frank Williams. Yes. He reduces in Frank's unique way, these little just gems, these nuggets of discussions, and that's got its own landing page on our education area. You can watch those and listen to those, and I think they really complement what John and others are doing with the Young Lion stuff. So, John, I mean, this was really, really great. We're looking forward to having you back with us. And, you know, on behalf of the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation, all our partners, John, we thank you, and everyone who's participating today or watching and listening in the future, thanks for being a special part of this. We hope you're finding good value in these resources. We sure do enjoy helping to produce them. And stay safe out there, everybody. Be well. Keep playing. Keep listening. Keep being creative and exploring. And we'll see everybody back real soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at MarineMax Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.